Sunday, June 3rd at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl will feature the music and career of composer and song stylist Betty Carter. Our guest will be Aura Harris, friend and manager to Betty Carter, and pianist and educator Danny Mixon. That's Sunday, June 3rd at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. And you cut out my software, David. Anyway, it's all right. Thank you for joining us. And thank you, everybody, who pledged during the recent drive that has just ended. Yay! What you just heard was Nina Simone, the theme for Sugar in My Bowl. I want a little sugar in my bowl. And let's see, what we're going to do now is we're going to talk to Patricia Nicholson Parker, who is one of the organizers of the Vision Festival. It's number 17. They're doing number 17 right now. And let's see, I want to start off with this here.
What time is it? I can't hear you! Oh, come on, now you can do better. What time is it?
Thank you.
On the line we have Patricia Nicholson Parker. Hello. Hi, Patricia. Hey, there you are.
Yes, I am.
How you doing?
Making a pile of tea.
Oh, good.
So
Vision Festival 17 starts on June the 11th, next Monday.
Yep.
Tell us about the Vision Festival. As quickly as you can.
As quickly as I can.
Right.
Well, this is 17 years, so does that mean we've grown up? The festival is really committed to a range of really high-level avant-garde jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really committed to keeping our edges open, so being responsive to the time that we are in. So 17 years, times have changed. And it does, when I say responsive, I don't mean just like reflective of. I mean responsive with a sense of conscience and responsibility. Responsibility to the artists that were there at the beginning, and as well as responsive to the needs that we perceive are present today. That's at least the idealism behind it, to be truly responsive to where we're at. Sort of makes this, I guess, a bit different from some other festivals that, you know, exist.
Now, the Vision Festival is also associated with a creative arts collective, or... Am I correct there? It's like, is it not related, or?
Everything's related.
Okay.
I mean, it's not a strict, there have been various associations that have ebbed and flowed around the Vision for Arts for Art and what we do.
Right, Arts for Arts, right.
Yeah. At one time there was an association called RUCMA.
Right.
But that became, it didn't, it just became confusing to use a different name. And so we just call it the advocacy aspect of Arts for Art.
Okay.
Now, sometimes of the year there's more meetings than other years or times of the year. We do what we can with limited resources.
Mm-hmm.
And also people's energies. It's sort of hard nowadays. I think, everyone's scuffling.
Right.
And you don't have a lot of free time to just get together and hang out and meet and talk. Even though getting together and hanging out and meeting and talking can be productive, but it's usually a slow productiveness. It's not like, oh, let's meet, get together, meet, and we're going to change everything in three meetings. And, as I'm sure you're well aware, it isn't like that.
I know. Well, actually, tell me about, I want to sort of move forward with regard to the festival itself. The lifetime achievement member will be Joe
McPhee.
Yes. Now, how did you decide that Joe McPhee was going to be the man this year?
There was a group of musicians that got together and met, and we talked about different possibilities. And Joe is, in some ways, extremely obvious choice. In other ways, maybe more subtle. But the way they're chosen, it's got to be someone who really has benefited others, not just themselves.
Ah, yes.
Who has been an example in some way, or it's different people who've been given this recognition that have done it
right.
Different ways. I mean, Joe McPhee is an amazing person for his. The combination of being one of the most incredible musicians, straight up, musicians.
There
is. And at the same time, unbelievably humble in the way that, and his humility makes him a more subtle choice because he's not right out there. He's someone who always insists, he likes to work with others, he likes to collaborate, and he insists on an equality in that collaboration.
Right.
And he gives respect to the people that he works with.
I know one of the great things about him being honored and the members, the persons that are honored each year, they have an opportunity to just really show their stuff with different groups, different ensembles. And
you get a sense of the range of what they can do.
Right. And just so people know, Joe McPhee plays trumpet.
As well as
yes.
sax.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know what his first instrument was, actually.
Mm.
I think that he really is one of the few sax / trumpet players who really is equally strong in both instruments.
Excellent.
I mean, I don't know of anyone who that's true. I mean, most people have a main instrument and then a secondary.
Right.
He's really equally, he speaks fluently in both languages.
Now, I haven't noticed whether... first off, let me say, I'm playing in the background Nation Time by Joe McPhee, part one. I'm going to sort of ease my way into part two. We probably won't have time to hear most of it because we need to be wrapping up really soon. But I noticed that... and by the way, the recording is from WBAI at the WBAI Music Store.
Wow.
It's a recording. It's like Joe McPhee and Survival Unit 2 at the WBAI Music Store. It was like 1971. So
I think back in the early 70s, WBAI did a lot more music.
Well, they were also at the church, apparently,
right.
at that time, the 60s. Something Street. And one of our listeners, actually one of the Sugar in My Bowl listeners, Chris Albertson, was involved in the release of this CD, so that was nice to know. You got any other treasures? Share them, Chris. But I didn't notice whether you had dance this year. Do you have dance this year? I know you still have spoken word.
We do. We have most of the spoken dance is almost, there's some dance every evening almost.
Okay.
Except for the first night.
Okay.
The only poetry in the festival this year is on the opening night and on Friday. There's a poetry thing at the housing development where we do the free concert.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the poets I have there. Tracy Morris is on June 11th.
Oh, okay.
And she's pretty remarkable and needs not too much... explanation. And then on Friday...
The 17th, Amiri Baraka is going to be...
Right.
Yeah. Did you leave him out? Did you not count him? Were you thinking about somebody else?
I was.
Okay.
Amiri Baraka, because I...
I know, because he's such a, all-over kind of guy. He's such a Renaissance being.
Right.
So it's hard to just say, he's a spoken word person.
He's with Veronique Loft's Freedom Suite Band.
Yes, exactly.
And then, but on the 17th, he's with, he's not doing poetry. That's, there's a bunch of poets, but it's a...
Oh, that's a panel discussion.
Panel discussion.
Right, okay.
So that's, that's Freedom for Sale, Poets and Prophets.
Right. And I noticed you also have, Burnt Sugar was brought out of the midnight hour. Or the beyond midnight hour into the people time hour, people who don't want to stay up all night long hour.
Right.
They're going to be on the 17th at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
That's an interesting new slot for them. And it's in Brooklyn this year.
Yeah, it's in Brooklyn. We crossed the river.
Right. At Roulette.
Roulette.
509 Atlantic Avenue.
Yeah, 509, right.
Between...
right around the corner from BAM.
Okay.
And so that's great.
What's your site? Tell me the site. I'm looking at the thing.
www.artsforart.org.
Okay.
But for those people who remember it, it's visionfestival.org,
Yes.
We'll still go there.
Okay, good.
Go to the same place.
Excellent. Well, let's work with that one. Vision, V-I-S-I-O-N, Festival, F-E-S-T-I-V-A-L, visionfestival.org.
Right.
Well, thank you, Patricia Nicholson Parker, for sitting in and, you know, working on this, working fast and working hard. And for all the other collective people who are working with you.
Well, I appreciate it, and my pleasure to be here with you. Thank you for calling me.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We need to get out of this segment and get into the show that focuses on Betty Carter. This is Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Nothing but soul. Jazz magazines. You're living high off nickels and dimes, telling folks about what's on your mind. Jazz ain't nothing but soul. Trumpets casting saxophone, rhythm making love. People wearing fancy clothes, it's the voice of my people. For me, jazz is all the truth to be found. Never mind who's putting it down. Jazz ain't nothing but soul. The voice of my people. For me, jazz is all the truth to be found. Never mind who's putting it down. Jazz ain't nothing but song.
Hi, my name's Joyce Jones, and I am at the Village Vanguard with Jerry Allen rehearsing in the background, chatting with
Aura Harris.
Thank you for allowing me to visit the rehearsal and for spending this time with Sugar Bob Bowl.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, the reason why we're sitting here is to discuss Betty Carter.
Ooh.
Your relationship with Betty Carter is that you were her manager.
For over 20 years.
First off, how did you become interested in being a manager?
Well, to be honest, it all started with Betty Carter. I met Betty in 1972. I was working with a small organization in Boston called the Black Avant-Garde. And we did shows where we brought local musicians and talent in. And I came into New York one weekend with a girlfriend of mine. Went up to Harlem, and there's this lady up there with this beautiful long white dress, white bebop cap, shoulder out, singing. And I was just mesmerized. Went back, my girlfriend and I, who was a student at the New England Conservatory of Music, spoke and talked continuously with Gunther Schuller, asking if we could bring this wonderful lady that we heard in New York City into Boston to share her with the audience.
Uh-huh.
And finally he said yes. We did a concert there, and the rest is history.
Excellent. And at that point, did you become her manager?
I became her manager maybe 4 years later.
Oh.
I moved to San Francisco, and we got reconnected with each other, and we continued a long relationship by phone, and when I would come into New York, we would visit and say hello, and maybe in 1974, we started seriously working together.
How did you become interested in doing this?
Well, I came actually interested with Betty.
Right.
Betty talked me into actually managing her.
Oh!
From that small relationship we had, we developed a friendship. And she liked my honesty. She liked me as a person. And she said, oh, you could probably do this. Well, I've never done it before. I did bookings and things in Boston, but nothing on the scale of Betty Carter. So to be very honest, it was Betty Carter. Yes, I learned my managing skills from Betty Carter.
But how was it being a manager to Betty Carter? Did Betty Carter have a manager before you?
Not really. She basically did everything herself. Betty Carter was all of Betty Carter.
Mm.
And we started working together in booking dates. Actually, we started with her label, the Bette Carr label, that she started in 1969. And she really wanted that label to really take off. So we did the phone books. When she would go travel, she would bring phone books from every state that she would work.
Okay.
And I would go through the phone books, find record companies, and talk them into carrying some of Betty Carter's albums.
How did you handle radio and television and things?
Not much television,
okay.
But radio was very good because Betty was very captivating. to audience, and she always had a wonderful story. She's a great, great storyteller. Of course, all about music. Music, Betty Carter, music.
Right.
And she was wonderful with radio personality.
How did you connect with the stations? And you had the phone book as far as finding...
Get on the phone, call them, and talk to them. Betty Carter's in town. Would you like to interview her, talk to her, talk about the label? And everyone was, of course, extremely interested. At the time, she was working, but not really working a lot. But she always had so much to say. She was always very, very worried about the state of jazz. She was uncompromising in thinking and talking about jazz. She lived jazz. She loved jazz. Any opportunity she had to discuss and talk about it, the good, the bad, and the ugly, she would talk about it. So, of course, radio personalities just was very endeared by her conversations.
How was her experience? Because she wasn't really, well, from what I understood, she was probably the only singer that was singing in the music, singing jazz, that didn't jump over to pop tunes.
She
didn't sing Beatles songs.
No.
Right?
No, she did not. She was just real straight ahead,
mm-hmm.
as she would say, the 1 and 4/4.
Mm.
She was about the 1 and 4/4,
uh-huh.
as she would always say to all of her music, do you know where the 1 is? That was really a calling card for her sound.
Uh-huh.
And she was not so interested in all of the pop music that was happening around her during the time. Rock and roll, just jazz. Because remember now, she started this very early in the 40s when she was like a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Was when she fell in love with the music as a young teenage girl. She would leave the schools and go to the jazz club and listen with her ears at the door and just fell in love with it.
Wow.
And that's how she finally got in touch with and was discovered pretty much by Lionel Hampton. Yeah. That's where she got her nickname, Betty Bebop, Lionel Hampton.
Nice. So how did it affect her career by not singing pop?
I don't think at all, because she would not compromise from it.
Mm-hmm.
So she stayed true with what she could do. She would always say that God gave such wonderful blessings to Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, Carmen McRae. He gave them wonderful, beautiful voices. Mine is quite different, so I have to work with what I got.
Mm.
That was her story. So, and she thought jazz suited her voice and her tone, and she stayed with that.
Wow.
To pass your doorway, gave you a buzz, that's all. Lately I've thought lots about you, so I thought I'd pay a social call. Do you recall the old days? We used to have a ball. Not that I'm lonesome without you, I just thought I'd pay a social call. I'd lie and say things I just swear. But to tell the truth, I haven't been too well. And if you should try to kiss me, I promise I won't stop. Maybe we'll get back together, starting from this incidental, elemental, simple social call. But to tell the truth, I haven't been too should try to kiss me, I promise I won't storm. Maybe we'll get back together, starting from this incidental elemental simple.
WBAI, New York.
Hold me close while we kiss. Let me linger in heaven. Love is often over too fast. Make it last. Make it last. Let me stay in your spell. Love is sweet, so let's savor it. All too soon, this dream will be past. Make it last. Make it last. If life
and each note dies. I'll start with my heart unafraid. Let the till this moment is lost to the past, make it last, make it till this moment is lost to the past.
But she did one, as you know, with Carmen McRae.
Right.
That was fabulous.
Right. Do you know how that came about?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. You know how musicians are. Most people do. You know, when they see each other, oh, we should do something together.
Right.
You know, you're on the road and you see each other, oh, we should do something together. And they've said that so many times.
Right.
And one day Betty said to me, Carmen and I say this all the time. Give her a call. Talk to her and say, we've been saying this for years, so let's do something together.
Mm.
And Carmen said, okay. And we were, of course, really shocked and surprised, but it happened. It was wonderful. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Recorded live at the Great American Music Hall, I think, in 1987. It's wonderful.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it's a beautiful piece.
Right.
Actually, it was scheduled to go for just one day of recording. It was so wonderful. It sold out so fast. We added another day.
Okay.
And it was just a fabulous evening.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
How I miss all our stolen little moments, the many times I'm not with you. They are such precious stolen moments that are meant only for us two. Whenever you're gone and I know you're not here, it's so hard to remember when you disappear. With your face always there right in front of me, dear, but you belong to her. Why can't I always have you here, holding you in my arms forever, and I'll never have any fear. Whenever you're gone and I know you're not here, it's so hard to remember when
when you disappeared, with your face always there, right in front of me, dear. But you belong to her. I have heard when you have stolen moments, it is called an affair, unfair. I don't want to have just stolen moments, so be mine and I'll always care. Whenever you're gone, I know you're not here. It's so hard to remember when you disappear, with your face always there right in front of me, dear. But what you belong. How I miss all our stolen little moments, the many times I'm not with you. They are such precious stolen moments that are meant only for us two. Whenever you're gone, I know you're not here. It's so hard to remember when you disappear, with your face always there right in front of me, dear. But you belong to us. But you belong to her. But you belong to her. But you belong to her. They say into your earthly life romance came, and in this heart of yours burned a flame, a flame that flickered one day, then died away. Then, with disillusion deep in your eyes, you learn that fools and love soon grow wise. The years have changed you somehow, I see you now. Smoking, drinking, thinking of tomorrow, not your lot. Diamonds shining, dancing, dining with some man in a restaurant. Is that all you really want?
No.
No, no,
no, no.
Sophisticated lady, I know, I know, I know. You missed the love you lost long ago. And when nobody is nice,
and when nobody is nice,
recorded with Ray Charles.
Yes, she did. That was recorded, I think maybe 63.
I know that's before your time.
Yeah, but that's a wonderful, wonderful CD.
Yeah.
Baby, It's Cold Outside. You just never, ever forget that music. It's so beautiful.
Right. It never gets old.
Yeah, every time we say goodbye.
Yes.
Every time we say goodbye, I die a little. Every time we say goodbye, I wonder why a little. Why the gods above me, who must be in the know, think so little of me, they allow you to go. There sits an air of spring about it. I can hear a lark somewhere begin to sing about it. There's no love song finer, but how strange the change from major to minor. Every time we say goodbye,
every time we say goodbye,
every we say goodbye, I die a little. Every time we say goodbye, I wonder why a little. Why the gods above me, in the night, think so little of me, they allow you to go. I can hear a lark somewhere begin to sing about it. There's no love song finer, but how strange the change
from major to minor. Every time we say goodbye,
Betty Carter as a band leader.
She was a real strong taskmaster as a band leader. She was, again, when I think of her in music and jazz, I can't get away from the word uncompromising. She even believed when she did a review or write-up, anything in the paper, if the word jazz was being used, it should be capitalized. Mm-hmm. Capital J, capital A, capital ZZ. She would always say that.
Wow.
Because she said, well, if I don't love it and appreciate it, it's going to die. I don't want it to die. I have to let people know that I'm serious about this. This is important. Mm-hmm. This is our history. So if I fall down on it, someone else will too. And I'm not compromising with it. And she was very serious about that.
How did she find members for her band?
Well, you know, she was just so incredible. She would go all over. If we were on the road traveling and someone said, oh, Betty, you should come down to this little club. It's in the alley down the street near the store, and there's a joint down there. But there's a drummer down there. He is fabulous. He is so wonderful. Well, we would go. We would go, and she would sit, and she would listen, and she would find a lot of young musicians. And she trained them. She taught them what she wanted from the music. Well, she was always looking for talent. Mm-hmm. And she would always say, there's a lot of talent out there. You have to find it. It needs to be raw, and you have to work with it. So we always thought of the Betty Carter School of Music. You know, Art Blakey, of course, had the same school.
Yes, so did Betty. Right.
But a lot of people sometimes forget about Betty Carter as being one of those schools. Mm-hmm. They always think of Art Blakey, but they both were.
Right.
I mean, she found a lot. Louis Nash, Benny Green.
I understand Danny Mixon played with her.
Danny Mixon, yes. I met Betty. She and Danny, they were working together at that time.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, they were sweethearts
at
the time, and they were together at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was wonderful with her, with the music. Of course, he was such a wonderful player.
Mm.
So they worked well together. As a matter of fact, the concert that I talked about at the Newland Conservatory of Music, and that was, I think, 1973, 74.
Mm-hmm.
Danny was the pianist.
Oh, okay.
It was electrifying.
Wow.
That's good. Because Danny knew how to really play to the audience, and he would have everybody really excited. And of course, Betty loved that.
Right.
And it was lots of fun.
How long did they play together?
I would say 4 or 5 years. I'm not sure of that.
Okay.
It was a good time. It was a very good time for her during the time that they worked together. And he enjoyed working with her. And it was just music beautiful.
Well, I feel so horrible speaking over this song. This is Daddy Mixon. It's actual, you know, that's him on the piano. This is from, but I have to tell you what you've been hearing. And also I'd like to apologize, I need to apologize for the sound of the exchange between Ora Harris and myself. We were sitting next to an ice machine in the Village Vanguard, so it was either and hardly hearing anything, or sounding like we're in a tin can. So I opted for the tin can. So what we're hearing now is Sounds. It is from the Betty Carter album on the Betcar label, Betty Carter's label. I guess it was distributed via Verve Records in 1976, I have here as a date. Betty Carter, of course, on all vocals. Danny Mixon on piano. Buster Williams on bass, and Lewis Hayes on drums. Before that, we heard Every Time We Say Goodbye, Ray Charles and Betty Carter. That was originally recorded on the ABC Paramount label in 1961. It was I'm playing it from a Rhino release, 1998. That's Ray Charles on vocals and piano, Betty Carter on vocals, Pete Pittman on guitar, Edgar Willis on bass, Mel Lewis on drums. The Jack Halloran singers are the backup singer vocals, and any additional personnel is apparently unknown. Before that, we heard Sophisticated Lady, Carmen McRae and Betty Carter, the Carmen McRae and Betty Carter duets, Verve 1996. Carmen McRae and Betty Carter on vocals, Eric Gunninson on piano, Jim Hughart on bass, and Wynard Harper on drums. Before that, we heard Stolen Moments from the same release, the Carmen McRae, Betty Carter duets. Before that, we heard Make It Last, Betty Carter, Out There with Betty Carter. It's on a Jazz Beat 1958 label. Betty Carter vocals, Ray Copeland trumpet, Melba Liston trombone, Jerome Richardson tenor saxophone, flute, bassoon on others, Wynton Kelly on piano, Peck Morrison on bass, and Spex Wright on drums. Before that, we heard Open the Door, Betty Carter, Inside Betty Carter, originally recorded in 1964 this is a Capitol Jazz release. 1993, Betty Carter on vocals, Harold Mayburn on piano, Bob Cranshaw on bass, Roy McCurry on drums. Before that, we heard Social Call. Social Call, Betty Carter. That's the title track, originally recorded in 1956. This is from a 1996 GRP Columbia Legacy reissue. And then we have Betty Carter on vocals, Bernie Glow, Nick Travis, Conte Condoli on trumpets, Irby Green, Jimmy Cleveland on trombones, Sam Markowitz, Al Cohen, Seldon Powell, Danny Banks on saxophones, reeds, Hank Jones on piano, Milt Hilton on bass, and Ossie Johnson on drums. Gigi Grice is the arranger and conductor. Before that, we heard Jazz Ain't Nothing But Soul two times. Betty Carter, the original version from Betty Carter from I Can't Help It, originally released in 1960. How did I get this sick? Get rid of that 1972 over there. Hank, my partner, Hank Williams, is putting up this playlist on sugarmybowl.org also. The Vision Festival link is there if you missed the information when I was talking to Patricia Nicholson Parker earlier. The Vision Festival starts next Monday, June 11th. And back to Jazz Ain't Nothing But Soul. That's from I Can't Help It, originally recorded in 1960. 1992 GRP Verve Records release. Orchestra was arranged and conducted by Richard Weiss. And before that, we heard Esperanza Spalding's version with Joe Lovano from Radio Music Society, released earlier this year on Heads Up Records. Also get rid of that group of musicians, because Joe Lovano was the only information I was given for that. Anyway, I'm sort of proofreading as I'm reading, which is kind of late. Nation Time, Joe McPhee, that's what we're listening to. Joe McPhee and the Survival Unit 2 at WBAI's Free Music Store. It was recorded on October 30th, 1971, Hat Hut Records, and 1996, this re-release. Joe McPhee on trumpet, tenor saxophone, actually, on that recording. Clifford Thornton, baritone saxophone, cornet. Byron Morris on soprano and alto sax. Mike Cull on piano. Harold E. Smith on drums. Before that, we heard I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, Nina Simone. We're going to be hearing from that's the title of our show here. This is Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. Coming up next, Danny Mixon on Sugar in My Bowl. We're featuring Betty Carter this evening. Stay tuned. Joyce Jones, and I am here with
Danny Mixon.
Hi, Danny Mixon. Thank you for visiting WBAI.
My pleasure.
And you're visiting WBAI because I'd like to talk to you about your time with Betty Carter.
Oh, thank you.
First off, how did you wind up working with her?
At the time, I was working with Art Blakely and the Jazz Messengers, and I was working with him steadily at Slugs down in the Village.
Okay.
And a gentleman named Jim Harrison, who's also a jazz promoter, came in one night and he says, "Listen, Betty wants you to audition for her." I said, "Well, good idea." He said, "Yeah, she wants you to audition for her. Here's her number. Give her a call." The next day I gave her a call and she asked me to audition, and I made the audition. And my first gig with her was at Town Hall. That was a sort of a big hit for me.
Wow.
You know, at Town Hall. And, you know, I was, like, really happy about the situation because I like to play for singers.
Mm.
Yeah, I learned a lot from singers.
What have you learned?
You know, the being a accompanist is it's a whole different thing. You really got to listen to what the person singing as well as delivery and what you can put under them to to keep everything together. It's a whole different head than being a solo pianist or being the leader in the band. And that show, they had a lot of people there. One guy was there that I had a wonderful relationship with was Gene Ammons. And he saw me behind stage. He said, "Hey, baby, how you doing?" I said, "Oh, I'm fine, I'm fine." He said, "What you doing there?" I said, "I'm with Betty Carter." "Oh, okay." So with Betty, our musical life started growing, and I was really in school, so to speak, in the world of music that she was working on. Because I work with many singers, you know, Dakota Staten and many other singers, but her stuff was different.
Right.
You know, she was a hard swinger, and I like to swing. That grew admiration between us, loving the music in that way, you know. The key thing that I really understood about something with her is that she knew what she wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
See, that is the key. That's a beautiful thing, knowing what you want to hear from your band, the sound and your interpretation. And I would say music was like people have spiritually God, Jesus, Buddha, but spiritually music was her God. She always said that if she take care of the music would take care of her. And there was no lie about that.
Do you think that there are singers today that are as knowledgeable as Betty Carter was?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, you're at the new school.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. I'm really running into some different type of energy and thinking. And because they're not hearing a lot of the elders that came along. They're taking it from a whole different take. They heard these people like Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald, but they never really studied them or listened to them long enough to find out what it is that they're doing, you know, about delivery and all that. So that part of it is very interesting.
Is there any way that, you know, we're going to come back to Betty, but, you know, since we're talking about singers and your relationship with singing and being at the new school, is there any way that you see younger vocalists being able to grasp that understanding?
Ooh. Well, from my teaching and my concept, I believe the ones that are open to do it and want to do it and have the willingness, I see some people have prospects of continuing in that surroundings of what I'm working on, has worked on with other singers. Because I teach that. You see, you have to teach that, you know, and say, this is what it is. And not only that, I also play with my singers, accompanying them.
Mm-hmm.
I have a thing. You have to work with the best to be the best. I really believe that. You work with people in your own age bracket, and sometimes they're full of themselves. And they think they're hot this and hot that, and, you know, they got it all together, and they're running up and down the instrument, or they're singing every note they can sing. You know what I mean? And no. Everything I've received in my musical life, I've worked with older people, the best.
Uh-huh.
And some of the gigs, it was really challenging. Sometimes I didn't even know if I can do it.
Yeah.
But I stepped to it because, for me, the more the pressure comes down, the better I get. I just suck it up. I just come on. And I step to it. And that's what I'm teaching too, you know, how to deliver a song. Always pick a song that when you get on the set that's going to open your voice up. Don't sing a song that, you know, this is your opening number. You got to come on hot. No, no. Mm-hmm. You can start out with a ballad. The longer, you know, it starts to get you open and get everybody relaxed. So the next one you can do that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Was that something that you noticed Betty Carter doing?
Yes. Betty will start out with a ballad. And another thing, dynamics. Yeah. She had dynamics with her voice as well as with the band. And she really considered her voice as an instrument,
right.
Totally.
She was her own instrument.
Yes, her own instrument, right. You can't buy it in the store.
Right.
I had a deep appreciation of what this woman portrayed in her head. She stole something in her head, and she reached for it every moment that she can do it. So I really admired her about knowing what she wanted to hear. She dressed very well.
Well, that's part of the presentation.
Yeah,
listen,
that's my key. I'd like to talk about that
Please.
In a minute. I've seen Betty sew her own clothes because, you know, she had to take care of the family and do what she has to do for, you know, and so the budget was this and that.
It was tight.
Tight, yeah. You know. She sew her own clothes, got her own material. I saw her found some material that was stretchable. Not only that, it's stretchable that she can make what she wants, and then she can wash and hang it up. And you know, I mean, but she had to do this because we had shows to do. So that was another artistic part of her that, you know, about designing. She was, you know, and she liked to wear her caps at one time, you know. And that was her thing. Now, presentation. I teach that in my class. They didn't tell me, you know, I had to or whatever. But I let them know. You don't come up there looking like Miss Bobo Sands. And I told the musicians, they don't come looking like Mr. Bobo Sands. Bobo is Bobo.
Okay.
You know. Bobo got holes in his stuff in his pants and all the... All the women, and, you know, they wearing some stuff. No. Mm. The women supposed to look elegant because this is part of show business, okay? And in short, my brief statement about it, my grandmother and grandfather and my mother took me to Apollo many times. Mm-hmm. And I saw Bo Diddley and the Temptations and... My grandfather took me to the jazz shows. I saw Joe Williams, Horace Silver, Stanley Turrentine, Sonny Stitt, all on one show.
Yeah.
You understand? Now, the thing I want to say about the presentation, I never understood this until one day I thought about it. When those guys came out there with the pink salmon suits on and shoes and, you know?
Yeah.
When they first come run out on the stage, the audience did like this.
Ooh. Right.
They didn't hit a note.
Right.
You know.
The response to having seen them.
Right. But they ain't sing nothing yet.
Right.
Then when they got stepped in the mic, they one, two, and hit it. Showtime.
Right.
Then it dawned on me years later, I said, wow, that is the setup. Mm-hmm. The clothes was the setup. That's why they said, ooh. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's what has to happen again. Everybody wants to be sloppy. Too many. And I've been part of the crew that's done this. From Art Blakely to Charles Mingus, Frank Foster. I mean, all these guys were dressing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Joe Williams, you know, they all dressed, you know. I stand on the shoulders of these fine musicians as well as Betty.
Right.
You know, because of the fact that this is a hard to sell situation. Jazz is hard to sell.
Well, aside from the physical appearance, I was watching a video of some leader, and he had a singer in his ensemble. And I was looking at the presentation of that young lady. Visually, she was attractive, but her presence on the stage was, I don't even know whether she realized she was in front of people. You know, it was, she was sort of closed off, involved in her singing.
Right.
She didn't engage
with
the audience. Right. She didn't talk to the audience. She barely looked at the audience. So tell me about that and Betty Carter. Because Betty Carter.
She engaged the audience.
Yes.
You know, and that, you know, to me, Betty, if she can get one person that's engaged with her, she's good. You know what I mean? Out of thousands of people in the audience.
Well, I understand she also had, like, tons of stories. She was a storyteller.
In our life, you know, she was around with the Charlie Parker and Charles Mingus, you know, bus rides with them, going to different programs, shows and stuff like that, you know. And, you know, Ray Charles.
Yeah, yeah. You know.
I was there with her when she received a letter from, I don't know which record company, big record company, stating that she owes money for the string section on her record date with Ray Charles.
Are you kidding?
I'm not kidding. I was there.
Why would she owe money to the string players?
I could not believe it. I saw it. She told me, she said, I'm not paying for this. And then there was a gentleman named Joel Dawn.
Mm-hmm. He was at Atlantic.
Yeah, he passed away.
Right.
Yeah. He brought her back out to do her own record on the label. Mm-hmm.
That star will shine its light each time that someone sighs. Three stars for all to see, one for young lovers. That star was made to be the sparkle in their star, only one reason, a star you can wish on to make dreams come true. High in the sky above, three stars are shining. I hope that star shine down on you. And for the third star, only one reason, a star you can wish in to make dreams come true.
Betty inspired me years after to do my own record because she had her own label, Bette Carr.
You were on her label?
No.
Oh.
That never happened.
Pardon?
Yep, that never happened.
Okay.
Whatever reason.
Okay.
Okay, but what I did take away from that was the independence. Mm-hmm. And so now I've been making my own CDs for years. Betty took this on, to do her own album, sell her own product.
Right.
That took a lot of guts.
Yeah.
And hold it, being a woman too, and getting the respect. And also, I know how hard it is for a woman vocalist to deal in this business, you know. Guys hitting on you in the audience, mm-hmm. and then the guys in the band, and the managers, and it's a lot, man. Mm-hmm. It's not all that golden, wrapped up in a bow situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then if you're too strong, then you know, they want to call you something else.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And she had to get a hard shell to survive. So I understood her, you know, in a lot of ways what she had to do, you know.
Well, look what I have. I am showing Danny the Betty Carter album. He's on this with Betty Carter. He does quite a number of songs on there.
Well,
along with Onaji Allen Gome.
Yes, yes.
He's the other pianist on that recording.
And this was a great record date.
Tell us about it.
Well, the record date itself was very intense. She really wanted to be perfect with this. And we had one song that we did, I'll never forget, 16 takes.
Oh.
I don't know if it was because now that she had this opportunity to relax and really do it in her time, not rushing, but, you know, if you're putting your money out, you got a certain deadline, you know, a budget.
Right.
You know, she had, this was the, you know, the guy said, well, you know, do your thing, you know, and then, well, she did her thing.
Right.
You know, so, but I've learned from that too, you know, after 8 takes, it goes down, but it goes down before that for me.
Okay.
After 3 takes.
Yeah.
That's it. I like to do no more than 2 takes because the energy is up. After that, things for me,
right,
it goes,
right,
starts going down. Everything that I've experienced with her, I use myself today, even with not to do, you know what I'm saying? So there's nothing I could say bad about my experience with her because, in fact, it was all in my growing process as Danny Mixon, as the pianist, and as a man.
How long did you play together?
4 years.
Okay.
And then, you know, her life got better. As I moved her from Jersey to Brooklyn. She never knew about anything about Brooklyn.
Oh, really? You introduced her to Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a place over there on St. Philip Street, right there by the Brooklyn Academy. And it was a brownstone, and moved into that brownstone, and a lot of musicians moved in that block. Gary Bartsch was in that block.
It was, you know.
Cliff Barbaro, drummer, he was in that lot. Stafford James, bass player. You know, so it was a live block, you know, a sort of a renaissance. It was really a blessing that in my life, because she really didn't have, you know, if I didn't have any talent or something about me, we wouldn't have been partners and people engaging in music, you know, together. So
that's for sure. Well, thank you so much, Danny Mixon, for coming by WBAI and
sharing
your experience.
Thank you for having me.
Picked up the ball away. Followed in a way. Bad boy. La 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 la. Clean up on my. Clean it in. Bang 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 bang. Thank you.
Had a relationship with Abby Lincoln, I understand.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they did. Betty and Abby really did care a lot for each other. Now, unfortunately, they didn't see each other all the time, but they would hang out from time to time. Mm-hmm. I would love it when I would come to New York to do a date with Betty. I mean, nothing was more exciting for me than to go, as I would call it, club hopping with Betty Carter in New York City. Hey, Abby, come on down. We're at Bradley's. Hey, Abby, come on down. Let's hang out and go out and hear music.
Mm,
it was just fabulous. And she would, of course, hold court the moment she walked into the room. It was fabulous. She would be dressed to the nines because she always talked about dressing to the nines.
Mm-hmm.
Talked to her by Gladys Hampton. Mal Hampton's wife.
Oh, okay.
Betty dressing to the nines. And as Betty been on the bus with all the guys, Gladys was there also. So Betty learned a lot about dress and style from Gladys Hampton.
Well, Betty Carter was definitely a stylish lady.
Very much so.
Like visually and vocally.
To the nines.
Yes.
Say, you know, the nails,
right,
the
right.
hair,
right.
the shoes, the purse. I forget the other five of the nines.
Oh, my goodness. The nines.
There are nines. There are.
You know, I never knew what that phrase meant.
Yeah. I remember the hair, the nails, the shoes.
The purse.
The purse.
The hat?
Not necessarily. Okay. I can't remember the other four.
Back to the band and the musicians that she would work with. Did Betty Carter ever run up against a musician who wasn't, shall I say, cooperative in her instruction?
Yes, many times. Yes, always. And she always thought of that as the male reacting to the female and taking orders. But of course, like once again, it was always about the music.
Right.
It was never about anything but the music. And she was never ever shy of saying, "You missed that note." We were in rehearsal last night, and now I'm on stage, and you missed that note. So she would get very irritated about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, musicians would have another way of expressing her behavior, a little different from what I am, but
right.
they would know she was unhappy. And they would know it on stage. She would go right over there and start scatting to them until they picked up that note. She would. You know, ask Curtis Lundy.
Okay.
La 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 la.
seven rooms. We'll build a dream house of laughter near to the sun in the day, near to the moon at night. We'll live a lovely life here, living a heaven-filled life. Just you and I forever and a day. Our love will not die. We'll keep it that way. Up among the stars that shine, a harmony of love in a lovely tune. East of the sun and west of the moon.
I so hate to talk over this, but okay, what you're hearing is East of the Sun. Betty Carter from I'm Yours, You're Mine, Verve Records, 1996 release. Betty Carter on vocals, Andre Hayward on trombone, Mark Shim on tenor saxophone, whose solo I believe I'm speaking over right now, Xavier Davis on piano, Curtis Lundy on bass. Ask him about the shoes. And Gregory Hutchinson on drums. Before that, we heard With No Words, written by Betty Carter. It's from Whatever Happened to Love, a 1982 Verve Records release. Betty Carter on vocals, Khalid Moss on piano, Curtis Lundy on bass, and Louis Nash on drums. Before that, we heard the theme from Dr. Kildare. Remember the TV show Dr. Kildare? Three stars will shine tonight. That's Betty Carter from Round Midnight, originally released on Atco Records in 1963, Atlantic Records reissue in 1992. Betty Carter on vocals, Oliver Nelson, arranger and contractor, Phil Woods on alto saxophone, clarinet, Danny Bank on baritone saxophone, bass, clarinet, Bob Ashton on tenor saxophone, Joe Newman on trumpet, Jimmy Cleveland on trombone, Lloyd Mayers on piano, and Richard Davis on bass, Ed Shaughnessy on drums. Back to Betty Carter. This is Sugar in My Bowl on WBAI New York 99.5 FM.
Curtis London would tell you some stories if you missed some Betty Carter notes, and what she would also do if they did it often enough, and if they were late for her dates, because she would pay for her rehearsal. And John Hicks would tell these stories. God bless him, we love him, and so did Betty. Mm-hmm. But John Hicks bought her a lot of shoes because she would find them if they were late for the date.
Oh.
And she would buy shoes with the money that she'd find them with. So you don't be late on a date.
Mm. She didn't take too kindly to that.
Missing notes and being late. Mm. Kenny Washington would tell a lot of stories about how many shoes he bought.
Oh, no.
Yes, Winard Hopper.
Oh, no.
Winard, he got it.
Okay.
To have his love is all that a girl could want. To hold him close is heaven. To watch the sun come up each day. Joy. I took a chance, and there he was for me. He took my hand and said, fantasy had come.
That she thought was just so talented. Mm-hmm. And with some training, he will be big and go places.
Yeah.
And he did.
This is true.
But he got it fast. Betty wants me on time, and she wants me to pay attention to her music, because she would say, my music is no joke. You got to listen and pay attention and don't drop my notes. Mm-hmm. And she was serious about it, because she wouldn't compromise. That was Betty Carter.
Was there a particular instrument that Betty Carter had an affinity for?
Yes, the bass. Uh-huh. Yes, she absolutely loved the bass. Mm-hmm. Dave Holland, she just insane for Dave playing. I don't know if you remember the program I produced with BAM, the Majestic Theater in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
After Betty had passed, I did a show called The Music Never Stopped.
Oh.
And she loved the bass so much, so a tribute. I had like 5-6 bass with Dave Harlan being the leader of it.
Wow.
On the show. It was absolutely fabulous.
Wow.
In tribute to Betty Carter.
That wasn't
nothing
recorded?
But no. It was special.
Oh, okay. Oh,
yeah.
Beautiful.
And of course,
Dave loved her so, and they were all bass players that had played with her, Cecil McBee,
right.
Dave Holland,
mm-hmm.
and some young upcoming bassists.
Tried to tell this man that I'm not free. He gave me such a sexy look, I shook nervously. Well, I was breathing hard, stumbling and dropping things. His pace is off, he can't compare to me. He took my hand and said, "How do you do?" I got so frustrated, I began to look all around the world. Determination is his middle. I soon gave in to keep from going insane. And now the table's turning, he now knows how it feels to fall. There he goes, breathing hard, stumbling. Don't you often think?
Sandy and Freddie Habit. And yours truly, thank you very much.
Freddie Hubbard, she wanted to look for a song that you could hear the beauty, because she absolutely adored Freddie Hubbard's playing. She didn't always like his not being on time, but she loved it, and she wanted him to do that song because it was so beautiful, and she thought no one could play this like Freddie Hubbard,
right.
And it's gorgeous. As I said, you know, Betty goes out listening to music to see who's out there. And she called me one day. I'm in California. She's in Brooklyn. I went out. I heard this wonderful, wonderful young pianist. And she's so, so beautiful in her sound. And I like her. You're going to have to hear her someday.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry recorded 2 albums with Betty.
Yes. Dropping Things.
Dropping Things.
That was the live one.
And Feed the Fire.
Yes.
Which is the name of one of Jerry Allen's tunes.
Yes.
And I asked Betty, I said, well, Betty, when we finish with the recording, I said, what are we going to name the CD? What are you going to name it? She says, what else? Feed the Fire. So, of course, Jerry was very honored. And that's how Jerry and I start working together.
I see.
Betty Carter.
I heard. Restful.
need to hear them in life. It seems this world can find no peace. We need to love each other.
Yes, actually, through Betty Carter's label, Bette Carr, we started our little management production, which was, of course, Betty Carter and Ora Harris.
Right.
Just the two of us doing it all. Wow. And it was so incredible because people thought at one point there was some big organization going on. It was just the two of us selling CDs out of our bedrooms.
Wow.
As people would say when they were at that time putting it down, because at this time when Betty was doing Bette Carr, you had all the big majors. You had Capitol, Third,
right.
You had Polygram,
right.
And there was Bette Carr.
Betty
and Ora.
Yeah.
And Jerry Allen came under Bette Carr during that time before Betty passed in 1998.
So you had also told me that people haven't approached you to discuss Betty Carter in the time that she's transitioned.
No, they haven't, but it's okay.
Yeah, I was amazed. I just couldn't believe it.
No, it's okay. Well, you know how people are. They have their own way, their own style, and
right.
What they're looking for and what they want. To be honest, I was very surprised when I heard from you.
Well, I just think that Betty Carter is an important member of this music. You know, she is...
Absolutely.
You can't talk about this art and leave her out, and so I noticed she hadn't been included.
It's true, but I think, you know, as she would say, that's life, that's the way it is. I mean, you know, even when Betty was alive, it was like that to some degree. And I think a lot of it had to do with, at the time, you know, you had Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, Carmen McRae. Betty, she created her own niche.
Mm-hmm.
And she had like a cult following. People that liked Betty Carter loved Betty Carter.
Right.
They would be there. She had to work a little harder and kind of struggle. But she kept going with that sound. She didn't try to change it. She didn't try to sing like anyone. Only one voice, like Betty Carter.
Yeah.
There'll never, ever, ever be another. Because she was not just the sound. It was a whole experience. When you went to see Betty Carter, and you had a performance, you were exhausted when you left the room. If she did tight, you had a workout.
Yes.
I don't know where my man is now. I've been looking and looking and looking and looking at me. What is he doing? I've been searching and searching and searching. I've been all over town looking, hoping that he'll be found. I'm gonna lose some, I don't need. no, 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 no. Take my advice. If you find a man, girl, call a super, call on for your man. Don't let it. Hold on to him.
And she would be bending and twisting and moving and going down in her knees and sliding back and notes of crying and wiggling. And when she finished, you just,
it's
an experience.
Yeah.
Her audience loved her. Actually, her audience remind me of what, like, the internet media is today. Because they would find her. They would look for her. They would be there. They knew the songs. They knew the lyrics. They knew the words. They were really a following, a real serious following. And that's how she stayed alive. Her audience was it. The album she did, The Audience, in San Francisco, that was why she named it The Audience. Because
yes.
That's where her support came from. And she made this beautiful CD. If you open it up, she took a big, huge photo of the audience.
Yes.
Because that was her love. That's what kept her strong and going. They were there.
Right.
But if you open that up, she would all laugh about that. I'm sitting right in the middle with a black dress on.
Oh.
And it was not planned. It just happened. After she got off stage, I wanted to see it, and there was just one seat left there.
Uh-huh.
And you see the audience. It's just a great photo because she wanted to let the audience know how much she appreciated them over the years.
Mm.
She was special. She was just such an innovator in support of the music.
Well, thank you, Aura Harris, for spending this time with Sugar My Bowl and sharing this experience.
Well, thank you
the
so
Betty
much.
Experience.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And that's it. That is it for Sugar My Bowl. Make room for La Nueva Alternativa. Coming up next, stay tuned for La Nueva Alternativa. Next, Sugar My Bowl will be on, what is that, the 17th? Yeah, not next week, but the following. And we'll be talking to James M. Toomey. Yes, we're coming back with that one. So stay tuned. Coming up next, once again, La Nueva Alternativa.
Hello. Bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.